Certified financial planner Dave Pezzo. Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Pezzo Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Pezzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Pezzo.
Good morning, good morning. No recording with Kevin Miller because I was out last week, so we're 2 full hours today. And hopefully you'll give us a call at 580-5436-580-KIDO. Of course, if you prefer email, it's dave at petsofinancial.net. And I will be in Monday with Kevin, so we'll be back to our normal, you know, till something comes up. But back to our normal here next week. You know, it's interesting. I've had so many discussions here the last couple weeks. And we've had the volatility kicking back. So this goes back really talking about, thinking about stocks in general. Just, you know, what can you buy right now? What are bargains? And good discussions. This is not just people going, you know, the market's high. You know, it's too high. Okay. Based on what? You know, it's high. Based on what? It's high. In other words, people don't have anything. They just heard that it's high. So if it's high, that's it. And when we think about that as far as cash flows and dividends, we've talked about this. The market isn't that high. It's certainly not high relative to other assets like cash. Bonds are super high, super expensive to hold. But that doesn't fit the narrative of trading, the narrative of zigging and zagging, the narrative of we need people to watch us talk about, you know, stocks and what's driving them today. It's oil today. It's European markets tomorrow. It's the banks. That's the key to the market. It's the banks. It's what the Fed's going to do. What do we think the Fed's going to do next week? I don't know either. But for all week next week, that's all we're going to hear about. I promise you, that's all we're going to hear about. It just goes on constantly, and we don't think of stocks correctly. First of all, we think of stocks as this thing, the market. The market, meaning what? It's just a weird game out here that people play. Yeah, in some people's mind, that's exactly what it is. But how often do we stop and really think about the amazing mechanism of a stock market that allows people to trade businesses, interests in businesses, huge, dynamic, growing businesses every business day. The dynamic of all of the capital formation that it creates, the idea of all the wealth that it has created. It's an astounding thing. And we think of it as a game. A thing, like the market is a thing. It's not a thing. It's a place that we trade business interests. Now, we're talking about something that's like, for most people, that's it. Wow, that could actually be, for a lot of people, a huge insight. Wow, I never really thought of it that way. Never really thought of it as businesses trading. I've always thought of it as a thing before. I never really thought of it as it's just a market. And instead of buying groceries, we're buying pieces of businesses. We're trading them at a price that we agree to or don't. And thousands of them are available every day, tens of thousands. I can say no. I can say I'll sell mine, or I want to buy some of that. Or I won't buy that today, but if it comes down in price, I'm interested. In real businesses that generate cash flow, dividends, et cetera. It's an amazing thing. But it doesn't really stop there. When we start thinking of stocks and move it as pieces of ownership in a business, it changes the dynamic of this is some weird thing, first of all, number one. Number two, when we really think of it like that, we maybe can move further away from the idea that we're supposed to trade it all the time. That we can't just buy a quality business and hold on to it for a long period of time. And here's the shift I want you to be thinking of. Think of how you treat every other kind of property. Say a building. Just a simple illustration of a building. A building that has great cash flow. It just grows and grows. Would you want to know what the price of it was every day? Would you care? Would you care that your building was up in morning trading but faded at the end of the day because oil did something? Or I thereby proclaim that it was because of the Fed governor at lunch said that interest rates were going to have to be raised someday. That's what I've determined made the price of your building fade in the afternoon. It's insane. Nobody thinks like that. Except for our partial ownership of businesses called stocks. Nobody thinks like that. Nobody thinks, oh, woe is me. I don't know what I'm going to live on from the cash flow of my building because the price went down. No, you're going to live on the same cash flow from the building that you had before. I mean, imagine somebody with that kind of psychotic, bizarre behavior. And it is. What do you think about it? Well, I'm getting very good cash flow / dividends from my investments. In fact, over time, they've continued consistently, literally my whole life, have gone up much faster than the rate of inflation. But I'm really concerned because the building went down in afternoon trading. Who thinks like that? People that invest in stocks do. We all do. And yet it's absolutely insane. It truly is. Nobody would treat anything else like that. Nothing else is treated like that. I own a business. I do own a business, but I own a business, and it's generating great cash flow. And so he says, you know, the value of your business has gone down this morning. Well, I wonder, should I do some call options? Should I buy some puts? Do I need a new strategy? Should I sell some of the business? Nobody thinks like that. Nobody thinks like that. Except stocks. You don't think about that when you own a business, when you have a farm, which is a business. We don't think about that. If you own a piece of property. Nobody does. Absolutely nobody. But when it comes to the stock market, we don't seem to be able to get away from that. Literally can't get away. Dave, what do you think is going to happen to the market tomorrow? I don't know. What do you think is going to happen when the Fed raises rates? Actually, I don't know. I suppose it could, you know, the price of these securities could vary greatly. I suppose that could happen. Oh. What if it does? Well, I suppose that I would be a buyer if businesses got to a bargain level that I would want to own them at those prices for a long period of time. Oh, but, you know, everybody's worried about the next 200-point move in the market. insane. We are nutty. Doesn't it make you wonder in your life what other things you're just absolutely nutty about? That we do that it make no sense under the sun? None? I do. This is a normal reaction, how people normally react, and it's completely insane. Well, the market went down. I don't know. Who acts like that about anything else in life? No one. Who would treat, if they owned a business, that way? No one. Who would care what the price in the morning was, or the afternoon, or any particular day was, except for the day you buy or sell a commercial building? Only do we do this ridiculous behavior in the stock market. Truly, in my mind, it is the most amazing thought. And I wonder, and I sit there and I go, what else am I doing in my life that's like that? Where I'm completely, just because this is kind of the way the world is, and nobody stops to go, why am I acting like I need to be thrown in a loony bin? Why? Why am I acting like that? I just wonder what else I'm doing that about. Because we do this professionally at an extremely high level. Extraordinary when you think about the business reporting that goes on. All the reporters, all the people. We got to go to the exchange. Rick, they're about to announce what the bond market did the last 5 seconds. Rick, what's going on? And they go, oh, yeah, here we go. In 3, 2, there it is. The bond market moved 1/100th, 1 full basis point. No, it's pulling back. It's not actually up anymore. It's back. It's really right where we were before. Thanks for the report, Rick. Wow. I mean, we do this at such a high level, we've come to accept that it's okay to be breathless about nothing. Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. And we all ask, what did the market do today? With the click of a button, we go to our computer and it says, Dave, you're worth $923,000. Oh, yay! That's $2,000 more than yesterday. And then the next day, push the button. Dave, you're worth $918,000. Well, that just is horrible. I quit this. I hate this. I wonder if I should sell it all. It's incredible. Nothing else under the sun is like that. Nothing. So anyway, I'm pondering myself, what else? What else? What else do I see so funny? What else am I doing that I just accept? So that's my ponderance right now. Come ponder with me. Really, seriously. Does this strike you as odd behavior for human beings? As odd as I, maybe not as odd as I think it is. But doesn't it seem kind of odd? Our number is 580-543-6580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Love to hear from you. Either way, give us a call, shoot over an email, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580-KITO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-KIDO, that's our number. And we would love to hear from you also on an email, Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. And again, it's not the sauce, it's Petso, P-E-T, not the sauce, PetsoFinancial.net. All right, let's talk about making money. Joe says, let's talk about it first of all. It's kind of a two-parter here. Let's do the first email first. Making money, what happens when more people are making money off their money
than those who actually provide a product or service. Thanks. And then, well, let's take that one first. Why not? Okay. And then we'll go to the next one. So thank you, Joe. Thanks for the emails. And so, first of all, what happens when most people are making money off their money? Well, that would be kind of, that's kind of the old retirement problem, demographics, if you will, where people are living off of whether it's a pension, Social Security, or they have a pile of money themselves, or both, and they're not working. What happens when that happens? Well, when societies, and of course you can't have that in total because it doesn't, we certainly never have. I suppose we could all just sit around if we just had infinite amounts of money and nobody would work. But the answer is it does slow down economically in countries that don't have a lot of young people. They have old people, too many people that aren't working. So if a country's age gets older, then people have already acquired much, and they don't tend to spend as much as young families do. And so older people, sure, they do on travel and things, and some don't. Some just watch their grandkids. They hang out. They don't spend a lot of money. So it is true in a society, and it's true globally, and this is a big part of investment question, is what countries are growing the fastest? Which have the best demographics to fuel, excuse me, future growth? Excuse me. So that often is why people talk, like me, talk often about emerging markets, because they have a young population, and they're also growing right now. Now, when we take that with your next question, I think most of the country's job problems stem from the fact that machines, automation, and robotics have removed the need for humans. So what happens to markets when the machines have put so many people out of work that there is no one with a job to buy the things that the machines build? Again, a bit on the negative side, for sure. And it certainly is going to be another huge shift in productivity and where jobs are. No different than the industrial shift. It'll come to different markets, if you will. It won't be everybody moving from the farms. But you see, people have been moving and we've been automating for decades. Well, centuries, but really rapidly in the last few decades, where even places like farms produce so much more. Much of it because of drones, robotics, tractors, pesticides that produce so much more with so much less human input than before. And we grow. And we keep growing. And it's every industry. Finance. We couldn't possibly manage the number of accounts, the assets, not possible. With what we have now, we would need five times the number of people 20 years ago. It just continues in every field to allow us to do more with less humans. But this has been the dynamic in the discussion forever, that as more and more technology comes, more and more jobs are going to be lost. And those people won't find work. The population continues to grow. The amount of productivity per human hour is exploded. People still work. I do not know exactly what the jobs of the future will look like. I remember here last week standing at a hotel window, watching a worker tossing gravel with a shovel. Something you don't see very often anymore, right? I mean, it's very, very hard work. Very hard work. You know, we talk about, you know, you see somebody who's doing roofing. That's really hard work. And we talk about these things like, boy, I'm glad I don't do that. You know, I did my roof once. I'm glad I did it once. I don't ever want to do that again. It's hard work. A lot of the things that we don't do now, like go down a mile under the ground, or we can't go any further than that, but machines can and do already because it's so hot down there. But that doesn't bother the machines. It certainly bothers human beings. And it's dangerous work. And things that the robots can do, we can't or shouldn't. They're just too dangerous. I don't know what's going to happen. It impacts every industry. Will we have banks in the future? Will we have people like me? I don't know. Artificial intelligence is going to explode. Explode. What happens with technology? Virtual reality, I don't know. It's combine the two. It could be off the charts. It's hard to even imagine 20, 30, just 20 or 30 years from now, let alone 100. So taken together, you know what? I just don't know. Joe, I don't know. I don't know where the jobs are going to come from, but to think that it's a world that we can't exist because it's different, I disagree with that. And that basic premise has been dead wrong. Dead wrong. Every time. So I'm going to have to go with, it's going to be okay, but I don't know what it is going to look like. Nobody knows for sure, of course. And all of the guesses of how it's going to impact different people, I don't know. I don't know. I do think that to dismiss that we will need no people or have no people working, it'll only be robots, I think that's a long ways away. It's a long, long ways away. It reminds me, what's that song? The year 2525, if man is still... Who sings that song? I'll think about it. All right. Thanks again for the emails. I appreciate it. We have got to take a quick break here for Fox News. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetzoFinancial.net, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO, Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. Let's go to the phones. Jim, thanks for calling and waiting. Go ahead, please.
Morning, Dave. How's it going?
Good, good. Thanks.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I just caught the last part of your, you know, as the sun comes up later and later, I get up later and later, so. So anyway, I was just going to say, only you could put somewhat of a rosy picture on Armageddon. But, see, I mean, those of us with capital, they don't have to work, don't have to look for work. I mean, things are fairly rosy, but for the other poor schnooks, you know.
Well, we'll see. We've talked about this, and what were people going to do? Hey, when I was growing up, we were watching film strips of the Orange World, and we all just dismissed that. You know, yeah, well, of course we solved all those problems with technology. We didn't think then we were going to. We didn't. We thought the world would be so dirty that we would walk around with gas masks. We were taught that was a simple fact of life in school.
There's a difference between the industrial age and the technological age.
Sure, but you don't think you can draw parallels to the doom and gloom of that transition?
Well, not as much. It's kind of like human beings. We don't know when enough is enough. You know, we can't stop, you know. Now, creating a machine to dig an oil well or to dig out coal is a good thing, but then, you know, we'll replace human beings with everything. So we don't know when to stop, and, you know, so.
Well, we don't. All technology does is continue to find a need. If there's a need for, let's just say, even a server at a restaurant, which they've got robots that are now beginning to do that, then people will buy the robot.
But see, that is not a need. That is a luxury. For instance, for the longest time, I mean, you've got, you know, automatic doors. God forbid somebody actually push a door open, or automatic urinals, you know. I mean, everything is automatic. We've gone past, way past the need for need.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying, though, Jim. We've gone past that centuries ago. I mean, we really did. We did. Hey, you know what? You want to go to the bathroom? You can go outside. You can dig a hole. Okay? But we all said, hey, you know what? I think a toilet's a really cool thing. You flush it, and all that bad stuff goes away. That's cool. Okay? So, but we didn't need that. We had a solution, but we don't need that.
Dave, there's a difference between indoor plumbing and not wanting to even take the effort to flush a toilet.
I'm just saying, we've gone way past the need. So you can define where your need stops, okay? But if there's another way, for example, in the future, I'm sure that the toilet will sense number one or number two.
Yeah.
And it will flush accordingly, correct?
Well, now you've got heated toilet seats. God forbid you get your rear cold going to the bathroom, you know?
Yeah, but hey, on a cold day, come on, man.
Well, you know, I mean, Dave, come on.
Maybe I'll become a sitter in the future. Never mind. It's a bad joke.
But like I say, we've gone past, you know, if you don't use it, you lose it, whether it's a brain or whether it's a muscle.
No, I think it's going to be very interesting. I remember a film strip that dates me pretty good. Film strip in junior high called Future Shock. Future Shock in the book, Future Shock, and it talked in there about that people didn't know what to do because they didn't have enough to do because the machines and everything did such a bang up job of controlling their lives. So I think we're going to have to deal with it on a social issue as well. And, again, I don't know what it's going to look like.
Well, you know, a while back, well, you know, now they're, like, what is it, Pittsburgh, where they were test driving automatic driving cars, right?
Yeah, yeah, Uber is.
Uber,
yeah.
You know. And they interviewed one girl, and she said, well, I'd rather ride in one of those than with a human driver. Now, and I'm thinking, what a blithering idiot. I mean, a machine could go wrong. Now, maybe she was referring to a human who actually was texting and not paying attention to the road.
Right.
In
mm-hmm.
that case, maybe a machine would be a good idea. But
humans are distracted. Machines are not. So there is no question. Humans get tired. Machines don't.
Provided a machine doesn't go haywire.
Well, absolutely. No, they need fail-safe systems. There's no question. And we're not quite there yet. But I can't even imagine with, you know, a few more years under the belt that the arguments are going to be valid at all. And we all know bad drivers, don't we? I mean,
well, I'm just lucky. I am lucky. Even I'm 70 years old. I'm just lucky that I came along when I did, before computers, and when college didn't cost an arm and a leg, and when the future was optimistic. I graduated in 68, and I knew that the world was at my doorstep. I could go anywhere I wanted to, pretty much, and get any kind of a job. And those were great days.
Well, they might have been from a personal, I can go get work perspective, okay? But, Jim, those were the 60s, man. That was a tumultuous time. The markets were in turmoil. Interest rates were rising. Inflation was beginning to get out of control. And it just continued all the way through the 70s. It was a brutal time.
But see, I mean, Dave, I mean, you focus totally on economics.
No. The very first thing I said there was this country was in turmoil. And not economically. It was divided by Vietnam. The young were questioning everything, and rightfully. We had a group of terrible leaders that just continued to make very bad decisions in the time you entered the workforce.
So now we don't have the draft. We have mercenaries, pretty much.
And we also, at that time, were fighting the Soviet Union that we believed in 1963 was going to be mutual annihilation.
Are we still worried about them?
That's my point. Things got resolved. That's exactly. Thank you. You're like my perfect straight man, Jim.
Things didn't get resolved. We're still worried about Russia.
Well, we're back to worrying about them, but we did resolve it. It did resolve. And now we're back to worrying about it. We're worried about what the European banks are going to do. We make up stuff to worry about. And then it goes away. We were worried in 2010, 11, 12, twice in 12, and 13 that Greece was going to take the entire banking system down. If it wasn't Greece, then it was going to be what? Cyprus. Before that, it was Iceland. This is how we figure out how to worry about crap that just goes away.
Okay, look at our political situation right now. Who's running for president? We're in one mess because, you know,
Jim,
we'll
you're
go for
absolutely
anybody.
Making my point. We find one thing after the other to worry about. I will tell you that in my opinion, looking back in history, yes, we probably had more palatable candidates. We never had a known criminal that would ever, you know, how can you tell Hillary's lying? You see her lips move. So I understand how hard this is for everybody. But at the same time, we're looking at, you know, wonderful candidates like, you know, Bob Dole. Well, no wonder Clinton won. It's not, there's no message there except, I've been hanging around a while and I'm the top Republican, so I get the nod.
That's a good example. In my opinion, you got Bush and Clinton. Neither one of them, I mean, they were anything but veterans, knocking off actual veterans. Now, what does that say?
Well, it says that the veterans they put up there did not have a message. And because you're a veteran doesn't entitle you to be the president of the United States, nor does somebody who's not a veteran entitled to be. It's another thing on the resume.
Now, what was important was for Clinton to go on MTV and tell everybody he wore boxer shorts.
Right.
You know.
I know, and played the saxophone.
Right.
So
right.
We need another cool president. That's what we got.
That's the way things are these days.
Yes, agreed. I agree. It's a mixed message. But you know what? My point is this. Whatever problems we've solved in the past, they don't have any emotional concern anymore because they're resolved.
Well,
and
see,
so
the,
we do. We act like in the past, like World War II was, it's just a thing. It wasn't just a thing. The Vietnam War was not just a thing. The turmoil of the 1960s in our country was not just a thing. It was a big deal, and we got through it.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, that's just simply one element. Now, that's a small piece of a puzzle. I'm talking about the large picture. And, again, we're back to the Industrial Revolution, you know, getting machines to help humans where it's needed. Now we've gone way past need into just do it for productivity, and human beings can be eliminated. You get down, you know, used to you had a personnel department. Now you have human resources.
Well, that's because the bureaucrats are in charge. Can you imagine? Well, can you imagine what a horrible job being like the HR person for a big company? I'm sure they pay them well, but God, what a terrible job. I mean, it's all one giant bureaucracy. There are really no human beings in that kind of a job.
What I'm saying is I'm referring to the name. Personnel is personal.
I know.
Human resources is you're just another resource like a robot over there.
So. Yep.
Well, anyway, it's football season, and pretty soon maybe they'll have robots to play football.
They might. They already do. Actually, what do they have? They have these little. Don't they have? Yeah, they have drone things that they do drone fights now. They do where they fly. They fly. So they got people with their little, you know, whatever, and they learn. They fly in combat against each other, kind of like the airplanes, right?
That's another great example of technology. You got drones getting in the way of airliners. You get people dumbasses with lasers trying to blind pilots. But anyway.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
All right, Jim, you have a good day.
You too. Like I say, for us with capital, we can sit back on our wallets and grin.
That's true. Our ever-fattening wallets.
Well, I enjoyed the discussion.
Okay, I did too. Have a good one, Jim. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us. 580-5436, that's our number. Our email address is dave@petsofinancial.net. You know, it is, it's this weird thing where it just feels weird to me in the world. And so I understand where people are coming from. But I think we forget that there are so many things in the past that are weird, too. Granted, we're in a really strange, maybe the strangest time for politics. But it really, I don't want to equate it to 200 years ago, but let's just think about it a couple hundred years ago when it's real simple, right? And Aaron Burr shoots Hamilton. Yeah, you know, politics were pretty nasty and have been forever. This isn't new. Criminal conduct for power isn't new. Pay for play, it's not new. It's just elevated to a level that we've not seen. Because society seems to accept that if we can't find somebody legally guilty, that it's okay to lie about everything. I didn't have that many devices. I never signed off on anything that was top secret. Of course nobody hacked into this. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It goes on and on. And it's mystifying. It's frustrating. It's difficult for us. It really is. To accept and to feel that the world isn't awful, unlike it has been before. Worse than before. It's hard because we haven't resolved that. These bad people aren't out of office yet. She might come in to office. We could also, on the other hand, have a reality TV star. It's not Ronald Reagan. It's not. But before Ronald Reagan, we had Jimmy Carter. And before that, we had Richard Nixon. The presidents are not this list of amazing people. Amazingly selfless people. Every time. We've got the greats. Washington, Lincoln. There's many others that we don't think of right off the bat. I'm sure. Will Reagan be remembered the same in 100 years? I don't know. But it is awfully easy for all of us to look at things as if they were the worst ever. And it keeps us from investing. It keeps us from thinking forward. Why would we want to start a business if there is no need or perceived need in a few years, or to work hard because we have a belief that it's going to be a better world for our kids. Get them educated. Why go get an education? It takes a lot of time, a lot of money, and you're not working while you're doing it, typically, right? Not you can't work full time. Why, if there isn't a future? So there's a lot of noise about how bad it is, how it can't be okay. And because we are human, we tend to let in the negativity, and we also absolutely certainly don't ever forget this. is that when I make an argument that it's going to be okay versus an argument that it's not going to be okay, I can't make that argument sound as intelligent as a person who is always wrong, always negative, always sure it's going to be really bad. It's our human nature. The chin rubbing, ground, your lips on the ground, it's all bad. Contemplators of the universe always sound smart and are always wrong. Always. But we parade them around all the time because they sound smart. It's a truly remarkably amazing thing. And it's also remarkable. So I've got somebody who wants to selling off some stuff and da-da-da and is really sure. And has told me in the past years, I can always smell a stock market crash. Well, the last one smelled was sitting in cash after the market had gone back up a lot. Half the money got put back in, only half. It's kept going up, but we're sure we need to protect the other half that has never been put in the market. Incredibly brilliant business person, incredibly smart, and also clever by half. Smart people sometimes have the most difficult time because they think they can figure things out. They really do. And that what you can't figure out is the future. We can take great stabs, but here's the problem with it. Even if you got everything right, all your economic inputs, which is unlikely that in the first place, but if you somehow knew where interest rates would be 6 months from now or a year from now, well, I know they'll be higher. Really? Okay. How much higher? Well, I'm half a percent. You know that. No, I think they will be. So you're going to go bet the farm on that. But see, here's the thing. Then the markets, let's say you're right on whatever it is your inputs are. Is that how the market reacts to that input? Do you think that's how the markets are going to react? See, we can get all these things right about the input, what the future looks like, all that stuff, and then the markets do what? They react the opposite way. Because we also have human beings involved. It's this constant, but we don't think that way because we think so smart. We do. We think we've got stuff figured out. See, and I already know what the discussion is, even though we haven't had the discussion because it's going to happen on Monday. So you say, well, how do you know that? I know. Because the question that was asked is, when does the Fed meet? I think it's make their announcement. I think it's next Thursday after they meet on Tuesday and Wednesday. Maybe it's Wednesday afternoon. Oh. Okay. Yeah, okay. In other words, we've got time to make this decision before the Fed destroys the entire world. Because the Fed meeting is only known to us, not to the whole world. And the possibility of the Fed raising interest rates is only known to us, not the whole world. So what we take as news or information, and we think in our minds, yeah, okay, A and B, and we kind of do some calculations here, and I think if we raise interest rates, that's bad for stocks. And so, boom, we make these decisions. In this vacuum of understanding that says, wait a minute. If everybody already knows the same stuff I already know, isn't the world already positioned the way they think? And therefore, any reaction would be the opposite. Huh? In other words, what you know isn't worth knowing. But you can't convince yourself of that because you're so stinking smart, aren't you? Just don't be clever by half. We all have a tendency to do that. We'll be back with hour number two. After
football is back at Dave and Buster's with all-you-can-eat wings plus a $20 game card for just $29.99 every Sunday, Monday, and Thursday game days. Yeah, you heard me right. All-you-can-eat, unlimited, keep-em-coming wings plus a $20 game card for just $29.99. Cheer on your favorite team on massive TVs and play awesome new games. Watch the games and play the games with all-you-can-eat wings and a $20 game card for $29.99 every Sunday, Monday, and Thursday. Dave and Buster's, the best sports bar ever. See store for details.
Hey folks, Dave and Buster's want you to watch the first presidential debate September 26th at 7 o'clock. Whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, an Independent, a Libertarian, you're going to love the food, the fun at Dave and Buster's. And how about this? Free video gaming for kids, anything you can shoot, ride, or drive, free at Dave and Buster's. You're going to want to RSVP now at Dave and Buster's, 901-3806, 901-3806. See you at Dave and Buster's.
Hello and welcome to hour number two of Money Matters. And, of course, these are my opinions and my opinions only. And we are not here to tell you what to buy, or sell. We're not going to hear us talk about a packaged product that somehow you get participation in the market with no risk. So you can be a market player and not have risk in the Wall Street casino. Not going to hear about that either. Because, you know, honestly, doesn't it strike you as, it does me sometimes, when I hear these things, and then people go, why don't you like that? If it was going to work, why wouldn't I just put all my money in it? Why wouldn't I put all our client money in it? After all, it pays 8 to 12% commissions. Yeah, right up front. I wonder where that money comes from. I just wonder. Wonder, because it's like, is that not like, isn't it like built into the product? No, you don't pay any of that. No. Why wouldn't Goldman Sachs just like put all their money in it? I wonder why Warren Buffett isn't smart enough. Why would he take risk in the market if you could just have no risk? It's sometimes it just kind of like baffles me. But it isn't baffling because here's the deal. It's all down to this. I just want to have a guarantee. I want to know that my money is safe. But I want it to grow. And I want it to be safe. And I want it to grow. But I can't get any earnings on it. But I want it to be safe. And so we're willing to believe the unbelievable. Even in our heart, we know it's not true. Because we want a guarantee so bad. So badly do we need a guarantee. Unfortunately, life is uncertain. It really is. Let me shift gears a little bit. Two things. I'd love to hear your comments on this. So I've been thinking, okay? So I heard somebody talk about this, okay? Was making a suggestion, which I appreciate so much. Here's what I think you should do with this segment or the whole program, whatever. We'd love to hear from you, okay? It's at petsofinancial.com. If you think of something during the week, whatever, just shoot it over. And also, we've got podcasts. We'd like to hear from you what we should be doing in this 2 hours. The thought was, why don't you go in and, like, do some recordings? Not the same one, but, like, just, like, teach. Just, like, here's a concept. Boom. Talk about it for the 45 minutes that you have it or on air per hour. Like, do that a couple times a month. And then we'll do questions, like live Q&A. Well, that's interesting. But I wonder about that. And then I go, all right, well, if nobody's calling, maybe that's what people want. Because we're not getting that many calls, not like we used to. Is it because the market's too dull? I mean, you don't want to read too much into anything. So I'd like to hear from you. So please let me know. Do you like? Should we be like coming in on a Thursday and recording for a couple of hours twice a month? You know, kind of a set one, like the first and the third Saturday, rest of the time, something. So people have questions and then we come live. What do you think? What would you like to think? All right, shifting. Let's talk about the education segment. margin of safety. Now, this is a difficult one to, you know, because you can't measure margin of safety. It's not, oh, there's a margin of safety. What does that mean? Margin of safety, of course, is that, like, you're driving in a lane, and if you veer 1 foot to the left, you're in an accident. Well, margin of safety would be there's a guardrail there, number one. Number two, maybe there's 2 feet or three. There's those little nauseating strips that you know, if people, oh, yeah, I'm awake. Right? Those are safety things that create a margin of safety where a small error isn't deadly. We have a margin of safety. And in investing, what is a margin of safety? Ah, and is it considered? Not really. It really isn't. And does the media help us with this? Of course it does not. Because whatever's hot and going to town does not have a margin of safety. But it doesn't mean it's going to die anytime soon. But what we do know is that when something's doing well, it gets all the press, doesn't it? And we don't think about things like diversification. Why should I? Because when times are good, you don't really need a margin of safety. A margin of safety is there to give you room when something goes wrong. And when nothing goes wrong, you don't need that. A margin of safety is carrying a parachute, right? Well, if the plane lands okay, you don't need it. Who would need it? So when we think about that in investing, it does begin with diversification. We're not going to dive into what's diversification and proper diversification, so on and so forth. Just understand that that is one of the aspects of putting in a margin of safety. It says, I am not 100% sure that only this thing is going to be the best thing. I need to diversify because I don't know what the future is. That's what that says. But a margin of safety, as we're considering, you know, where do we, let's say, tactically overweight? Okay, we want to diversify, but we're not necessarily going to say we want exactly 10% in all these 10 things, right? We maybe are going to have a little more in some areas if they have characteristics of or better characteristics than others. For example, right now, I wouldn't be a big buyer of 30-year U.S. government zero coupon bonds. Really super susceptible to interest rate moves. And since we're at 1.7% on 10-year treasury, pretty low levels, I just don't think they work for the next 30 years. Really good. Okay? So I wouldn't want a lot of that. That's an example. I wouldn't want a lot of cash that earns zero. Just don't want to have a lot of that. Because right now it earns zero. So we want to diversify, but we want to do it in a tactical way. So when we think about that, what areas of the world look like they are at bargain levels and have a margin of safety? Margin of safety. See, think about that in investing because we don't think about it. The risk-adjusted return is what we're really saying if we want to, you know, sound a little smarter. You know what I mean? You know, toss out some terms that sound pretty cool. What is the risk premium you're paying in certain asset classes? What is it? Not really paying. What are you getting? Are you getting enough? So when we think about the risk, and you just go out and buy stocks, you're fine when the market goes up. It's okay. In fact, it's more than okay in 1999 to buy tech stocks. Buy air.com. Buy all new IPOs, especially those that end in .com. You don't want a business plan. You just want to own air.com. And it worked. The P.E. ratios were infinite. And the people that bought value stocks, the ones with real earnings, the ones that paid dividends, The books that came out were diversification is dumb. But there was no margin of safety. These companies didn't have any real earnings. And so when the free money train stopped abruptly in early 2000, and people started asking for, how are you going to make money? And weren't satisfied with the answers of somewhere down the road, the rug got pulled out from the free money. And as Warren Buffett says, when the tide goes out, you see who's swimming naked. We saw it. And there was a lot of naked swimmers. No margin of safety. The companies collapsed. Not just stock prices, the companies collapsed. But it was fine to party like it's 1999 until it wasn't. We don't know when it ends. But without a margin of safety, these companies went away. Margin of safety in investing is everything from I have an income portfolio and therefore I need a reservoir. Because when markets are down, I can't sell my seed corn at a low price. And in today's low interest rate world, you cannot generate enough income on a portfolio to live off of. So you do need reservoirs. That's your margin of safety. What you need to think about with margin of safety is, what risk am I taking to get a certain return? And when we think differently about this, we think about what my upside potential to downside risk is, we begin to think like you're supposed to think intelligently about investments. What is my downside risk to owning an upstart biotech company? It's that it's going to go to zero. Okay? I mean, it's gone. It's just going to burn through the cash, raise some more, burn through the cash, you're out. It's zero. What's the upside? $1 billion cure for cancer. Just had a biotech company literally, close friend of mine, recommended it. Oh, he's a good businessman, and it's right up his field. I'm going to say 6-7 years ago. It's up, I think it was 4,000%. I'm not joking. It was the biggest hit I've ever had. Crazy. Absolutely crazy. Downside was gone. But the upside is huge. So when we think about that in this context, I'm not telling you about a big hit like that happens all the time. I'm telling you that because it never happens. I don't expect it'll happen ever again. It was that big a hit. But how many losers can you have when you have 10 baggers, 20 baggers, 50 baggers, 100 baggers? Peter Lynch said it famously. If you don't have any 10 baggers in your portfolio, you never can really make a lot of money at this. This is why people say, you know, which is wrong. Oh, you're never going to go broke, you know, selling your winners, making a profit. Yeah, you do, because you don't always make a profit. And if you don't make enough to cover up your losers, you lose. Oh, yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, it's true. Cliches can be silly. So we think about that. That's one of the reasons why when people overtrade, right? So how many times since Apple's last double has everybody said you've got to leave the stock because of one reason or another? Or 100 reasons.
Well, this is the last time. The Apple 4 is just not going to, the Apple 5 won't be as good. If Apple 6 isn't, all, you know,
on and on and on and on and on. Other people are getting in this business, that business. The Galaxy whatever is a better thing. It just goes on and on. Like you're going to trade around all that. You're going to get in. You're going to get out. You're not going to. But how many times in the overall market have we heard about, whether it's Brexit and before that it's worries about the Fed, and then before that it's worries about Europe, and then the European spring comes up and down and
up, and it's Greece, and it's Cyprus, and it just the list goes on and on and on to try to get you jarred out. And so you think about this with a company like Apple. Do you want to own the company or not? Because if you don't, quit trading pieces of paper around. It's a business. It's a cash flow machine. And if you're in competition against a company that has $150 billion and has massive amounts of cash flow, tens of billions a quarter, it's a tough competitor. You want to trade because you think that the stock's going to go from 114 to down to 110. Have at it, pal. I'm just happy I didn't get scared out for the last 100 points. Because there's every reason always to listen to the noise and sell. Always. Margin of safety is that you see and know what you own. And so when people are running around with their hair on fire about how bad it is, you can kick back, watch the Broncos play, and not even be thinking about it. Go hang with your grandkids and quit worrying about it. A margin of safety says, you know what, I'm not smart enough to figure out the whole wide world. I'm not smart enough to know what's going to happen. A margin of safety says, that's why I don't go all in and why I understand my investments from this perspective. If I'm talking about a big hit that could go to zero, I accept and understand it could and some will go to zero. Is that more risky than saying, well, I'm just going to buy a bond and get 1%? That is the interesting question. You see, when we contemplate a margin of safety, when we find areas that maybe are higher risk but are priced correctly, then with that margin of safety, overall, risk-adjusted, they are much better and lower-risk investments than those we perceive as low-risk. If you are only going to receive a nominal return for an investment, but there's any downside, that's a problem. Let me give you an example. If things go well, we think this real estate thing we're doing, this is the old REIT thing, we'll do 8% if things go well. Well, what if things don't go well? Well, they will. But let's pretend they don't every once in a while. So if things go well, we're going to get 8%. Okay. That's nice. That's great. 8%'s okay. It's acceptable with a piece of your business, your portfolio to be thinking this could do 8. But is it acceptable that most of the times it does 8? Sometimes only 5, but maybe that rare occasion it'll do 10. But let's say 20% of the time. If the economy is not very good, we might actually lose a little bit of money. Well, it's only 20% of the time. It's a tiny amount. Maybe it's only 10% of the time. Whatever number you want to put on. So let's just pretend we're looking at our mathematical equation. We say we put it in and we get 8%. Then we get 7, then we get 8, and then we get 5, and then we lose 30%. How'd we do? Well, most of the time we did fine. Overall, we didn't make any money at all. So is it a good investment even if you're pretty sure this is going to be an 8% period of time? And the answer is no, because there's no margin of safety relative to the return expectation you are expecting. So as we look around the world and people go, I don't know if I want any emerging markets. I don't know if I want anything foreign. It's not working. Correct. It has a margin of safety. Having a margin of safety does not mean that tomorrow is the day that the tech bubble bursts. Or what have you. Whatever's working today probably will work tomorrow until it just doesn't. energy stocks were working very well until, well, they weren't. Biotech was on fire for years until it got cut in half. Nobody wants it now after it's cut in half. I do. But it's not that dividend paying. Right? It's not. You can't put it all there. But you can put some. And you can look at it from a margin of safety. Why? Because the price is down. The outlook is not great. The politicians are beating it up every day. I know. Everybody knows. What you know isn't worth knowing. It's priced in. It's such a hard concept for us. But when we're thinking about margin of safety, we need to know that something can go wrong and we still make a return. Back to the real estate thing we talked about, right? Eight and eight and eight and eight and eight and boom. Doesn't work. It doesn't work. But let's go back and say, what about, for example, at the end of last year, as you look at historically, just historically, the high-yield bond market. And you look at it and you say, well, I don't expect to make a bazillion dollars on this thing, but, okay, it looks like a good return. And what is my downside? Well, historically speaking, because the spreads, the risks premium we were being paid was at a high enough level that the expected losses were minimal to zero in a terrible environment versus double-digit upside. Interesting. So, having said all that, think margin of safety. Think upside, what's downside as you evaluate and think about your investments. And if something appears to be too good to be true, and you don't understand what the risk is, right? Like there's a high return. I mean, we can just go on this. Like, well, mortgage rates are paying 12% interest right now. I want a 12%. I want 12%. Who doesn't? It's a dividend. Right. But 12% dividends with 10% per year loss of capital is not a 12% return. Got to know what you're getting. And if it screams, that's a lot, that's really pretty high, or that sounds like a lot, or that sounds too good to be true, it is. And you need to understand what the risk is. Not that you can't take the risk, but you need to understand it. I got to take a quick break. And when we come back, do give us a call. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. That is your number, and I wish you would, folks would give us a call here. And also, if you prefer email, that's fine. It's dave@petsofinancial.net. Now, I mentioned a couple of emails got, and we need to jump on those real quick. And I did run a little bit long in our monologue, so we're going to have to play a little bit of catch-up here on some commercials later. I think we'll just shove a big one at the end. How's that? But, you know, yeah, we're going to do that. So we're all right. Okay, Dave, you mentioned that Australia has a current – this goes back a couple weeks. Dave, you mentioned that Australia has a current stock market composite yield of 5%. That's when we were talking about global yields versus what we were getting in the U.S. And, again, another reason why – tactically, we might want to be considering, from it, especially on an income perspective, of tilting even more international than normal and how low international allocations typically are for U.S. investors. Okay, so anyway, Australia yields 5%. This would indicate that its market is cheap on a relative basis. Do you ever recommend a single country for an investment outside of the U.S., of course, or do you recommend foreign stocks always be purchased in multinational
mutual funds. In other words, not really like a sector or a one company thing or country thing. The answer is normally yes. I do recommend people steer away from single countries. Although once in a while something becomes so absurd that you just kind of, let me rephrase, it becomes so absurdly hated that you have to take a couple percent and go there. It's so compelling because it is so hated. Now, there's usually a really scary reason why it's that hated. Like, do I think you should invest in Venezuela? No, I don't. There has to be rule of law. There has to be reasons that they can come back. Okay? It can't be just a big criminal undertaking. I, for example, have a hard time saying I think we should have any more than a tiny percentage of a large emerging market fund in a place run by criminals. It just doesn't end well. It's the same as companies that always say, you know, well, we've got a big government contract and that can't go wrong. Yes, it can. It will go wrong. If you're in bed with the government, ask the healthcare companies how that's going for them. Jump in bed and talk about how Obamacare is going to be great. Guess who's running from the big government now? Same companies. You get in bed with the government, you die. That's it. If the only reason that SolarCity can stay in business is with subsidies, then they won't. At some point in time, they will die. Because politicians, the public, whatever you want to say, is just going to get sick and tired of the political corruption. And they'll be cut off. So this happens all the time. And you think about that with individual countries, same thing. You have to be careful with that. But if it's really, really super hated, that's fine. Now, the reason that Australia is a particularly big concern, though, as a one-off, is because it's commodities-based. But wait a minute, commodities are hated. So, Mike, what I'm saying is you could with Australia. It's not quite hated enough for me, but it's close. And it does, and obviously the 5% yield that it has is very enticing. But understand that yield, if it's commodity-based, is coming down. Companies can keep those dividends up for a while, but not forever, if they're not earning it. And commodities companies certainly aren't earning it now. So do be careful. Look at it a little more closely and consider currency fluctuations as well. Now, don't think you're going to be a currency trader. You're not. You'll be wrong. You don't kid yourself. People think they can trade this stuff all the time, and they can't. You can't. Even the people that are famous, you know, George Soros was wrong about Brexit being the disaster of the universe. It's not been. And right after an initial decline, the pound is held right there. It's not disintegrated further. So what everybody knows isn't worth knowing. So be very careful. If you're thinking of this as an opposite thing, you're going to move in opposite direction, and you are looking at that, I'm okay, but keep it small and understand why it is a misleadingly high yield, because it is. Why is Australia so high? Because people think it's coming down. Down to zero? No. Down some because it's commodities-based? Absolutely. Know what you're getting, know why it's down, and be very, very careful of investing in corruption. You know, countries that are communist, in total disarray, unless you're doing it as a basket. I don't have any problem with frontier markets, for example. Not at all. Emerging markets, but broadly diversified, knowing, you know, some of these little markets like Libya may not do that well. You know, they may not, while others might do really well and make up for it. Mike, thanks so much for the email. I appreciate it. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We do need to take a quick break here for Fox News. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello and welcome to our show. This is Money Matters. I'm Dave Petso, and our phone number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. I don't know if you've been out at the Boise Open, but well, I love that golf course anyway. That's where I am really privileged to play all the time. But what an event this year. My gosh, it's part of the playoff deal. There are no other PGA events this week. It is crazy, the coverage, everything. It is exciting. And they've got free concerts out there, all kinds of stuff. What a great family activity. I think it'll be busy this weekend. I hope so. It's just a great – the weather is unbelievable. If you get a chance to – if you don't get a chance to go out, I'm sorry. But be sure to catch at least some of it on TV. I know it's been widely covered and just a neat event. It's an amazing thing. I think it's year 25 for Boise. Longest running, continuously running stop on the mini tour, if you will. But this isn't mini. There's nothing mini about this. There are, I believe it's number 126 through 200 of the PGA Tour are in this playoff trying to get or keep their card, their playing card. It's a big deal. And I think there's only four tournaments. This is it. This is the playoff structure right now. But anyway, it's a very big deal right here in Boise and a lot of fun. So the question, I had a question come in here about could you use the same logic of downside and upside risk to Bitcoin? And I think that's a fantastic, you know, just a really great question. So thanks for that. I appreciate you taking the time to call in. Because we can wheel this into lots of things, okay? Not lots of things I hate. Don't get me wrong. But think about this on all things. What's your upside potential and downside risk to owning gold, silver, any commodity, Bitcoin? So when I look at that, this is just a fantastic question. So great, good for people that, you know, bought some Bitcoin and then it went up a lot and there's no intrinsic value to Bitcoin. There's not. It's a thing. It's a made-up thing. It's like I say, you know, why not Petcoin? I've got my own. It's Petcoin. Go mine it. I'm a billionaire. That's cool. Great. Let's see how that does. But Bitcoin anyway, it's out there. So it's a great analogy. So what's the dividend for buying Bitcoin? There is no dividend. Okay, so I get paid nothing while I wait for what? The price to change. And does it have to change a lot? Yeah, it's expensive to buy and trade Bitcoin. So you have to overcome like at least a 10% move for the buy and sell. Okay. So what's going to drive Bitcoin up? Well, the world's going to end or whatever it is, okay, or, you know, the debasing of the currencies and so on and so forth. Whatever. Downside risk goes to zero. Upside, I really don't know because I can't value it. How do you value something based on nothing? Nothing. It's a pet rock. Now, you might be okay to trade a pet rock. It's a tulip bulb. It's all of these things. Not because it's going to burst, I don't know. But I can't value it. So it goes up. So what? If I can't value it, the risk seems really super high. I mean super high. And I can't even put a number on the upside. Now, when I think about gold in the same basis, if you will, I have no yield, again, it's extremely expensive to buy, hold, keep, sell. What's my value? What's it going to go to? How do I value it? I don't know. Same thing, right? Same thing. So, great question. I think that's a... Again, see, the point of the question is this, right? It's not just about Bitcoin.
It's how we should be evaluating every single investment we make. Not with one side of the equation. I think I'm going to make a lot of money. I'm going to get paid 10%. But the valuation of the upside is I'm going to get paid 10%. What's the downside? That's the trade-off. The margin of safety question. That is the whole point of evaluating your margin of safety, your risk-adjusted return. Great question. Thank you so much. Appreciate you sending that in. All right, let's take our final break. And I don't know what happened. We just had two callers. Just went bye-bye. Come back. I saw we had somebody zipping down the road. Give us a call back if you fell out of connection. We've got good cell coverage here. I know you'll catch it. Anyway, we've got our final segment. It'll be a nice long one coming up. Hopefully you'll give us a call at 580-KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. Final segment. We got plenty of time, though. I see somebody calling in now, but there's plenty of time to take some calls, so please feel free to do so. During the week, anytime, hit us up. Go over to PetsoFinancial.com. We've got articles, calculators to help you with your financial planning as well as podcasts, okay? But right now, let's go quickly while we're getting this call ready to this email. Dave, how cool was the Snake River jump? Yes, very cool. I was curious why I don't see hardly any homes with solar panels around Idaho. I know the cost of solar is much cheaper now. Is it because our power rates are so reasonable? I know I was in Arizona and power rates were double what they are here. Absolutely. It's a cost comparison. Great point, Joe. But we're getting there. We're getting there. And you're right. We have a lot of sunshine here because you are seeing solar farms. I've talked about the one that I saw when I was out visiting a farm out south of CUNA. And there's a huge, super high tech, right? The panels turn to face the sun and all that stuff. Crazy, crazy amount of power being generated out there. But you're right, because we have hydroelectric. We don't have to be burning a lot of coal here. I think that's part of the reason. But as the solar panels come down in price, and they will, technology will drive it down, I have no question that there'll be panels on every house, every business in Idaho. Why not? More energy hits the earth every day than we use in an entire year. Multiples of what we can use globally hit the earth every day. Of course, we're going to tap into that. I don't know how long it takes, but I have no question that the power grid's going down, man. There's no way. There's just no way. We're not going to need this. We're not. People will have very independent sources of power, and once we can store real well in batteries, and that seems to be just around the corner, it's going to be very exciting. Thanks for the question. I do appreciate it. Bob on the road. Thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
So that's a really interesting point you bring up about the solar, and you can't see that how things, wouldn't be different. I can make the same argument for Bitcoin. What's the most expensive computer in the world worth?
Oh, gosh. You mean like Big Blue or Watson, you mean?
Or any of those.
Oh, billions of dollars, no question.
Right. I can tell you that the Bitcoin market cap, I think, is right around $9.5 billion, and that represents the most expensive computer in the world, because that's what it is. So when you say it has no intrinsic value, you couldn't be farther from right, as it were.
Okay. I still don't follow the logic. I don't.
Okay, so how mining works. You said you should just make your own coin. And if that's
right, several have. There's a lot of different coins out there that people can mine for, to my understanding, yeah.
There's hundreds. There's absolutely hundreds. But again, why aren't you a billionaire, as you suggested? Because it's that easy, right?
Go ahead.
No, well, okay. So the question I have is, how can someone speak so frivolously about something when they don't know so much.
I don't know what the intrinsic value is. I still don't understand your point. At some point in time, I need to take my Bitcoin or whatever it is, whatever commodity, piece of gold, piece of silver, and I need that generates nothing, and I need to find somebody else to pay more for that in goods or services than it's worth today. And I can't define that or what that is or put a value on it. You say it's worth $9.5 billion. Well, why would it be worth $10.5 tomorrow? Why? Tell me what was going to drive that.
You know about how many coins will be created? There's a hard cap. There's 21 million coins. Let's imagine there was a company that was called The Computer and it had 21 million shares. And since 2009, that computer has been running without fail and keeping track of a ledger like QuickBooks.
Okay, I completely get, Bob, I completely get that, okay? And the science of it, we've talked many times on this about the chain link and all that stuff, is going to completely change.
Again, it's called the blockchain, sir. And
blockchain is going to change everything in finance. I totally get that. Tell me how and why the demand for Bitcoin is going to go higher and take my market cap of $9.5 billion higher. Tell me why.
Very easily. There's many, many reasons. The inventor that we don't know if it was a single person or a group of people embedded in the blockchain, in the very first block, the headlines in 2009 that says the ECB is thinking about doing another round of quantitative easing. So when you steal from a money supply to the tune of, I don't know, first it was $700 billion, then it was, what was QE2? I don't know. I can't even remember. And then there was QE3, and that's $80 billion a month for who knows how long. All you're doing is stealing from the existing money supply. That is worth a lot to something that doesn't steal from a money supply. Yes?
I don't know. It hasn't happened to become a problem. The Federal Reserve has continued to... has stopped QE a long time ago, and we decided that that was going to be the end of civilization.
A long time ago, sir.
They stopped 2 years ago.
That's a long time now in your world.
Bob, Bob, it's okay. It's all right, Bob. I'm just saying if you're sure that we're going to have hyperinflation, as everybody has since 2009, then you're sure of it. And whatever happens in front of you isn't going to change your mind, and that's fine. All I'm asking is this simple question, this very simple question. Why does the market cap go up? And you're all the answer that you have in that is that you think Bitcoin is a better answer than gold or silver or real estate to what you continue to predict is the imminent collapse of the U.S. dollar and all currencies because of all of the Federal Reserve borrowing and so on and so forth that has not caused any inflation at all. And that's okay. I'm not saying it won't. I'm just saying, tell me why it's Bitcoin is the ultimate God-given thing that's going to work. I can't, because I can't value it, and I'm asking you.
Okay. So if you wanted to move...
30 seconds is all I've got. Keep it short.
If you could move $1 million or $1 billion for 10 cents anywhere to any internet-connected computer in the world in 10 minutes or less, unlike Swift, which you should be familiar with, is it worth something to you?
If I could move $1 billion, you can do that with a wire transfer. I don't understand what you're talking about. This is not new.
In 10 minutes for 10 cents?
Yes.
Last time I checked, Western Union, $5 for $50.
Okay. Hey, Bob, thank you. I'm sorry. We are absolutely out of time. Everybody have a wonderful weekend. I hope you get a chance to run out to the Boise Open. We'll talk to you live next week.